Makeshift Stories is now a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB. If you want to learn more about the network and how it supports Alberta podcasts, or check out some of our members' shows, please point your browser to the albertapodcastnetwork.com. And to learn more about our sponsor, please go over to atb.com/listen. Is there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an indefinable line between the reasonable and the highly unlikely? Makeshift Stories presents a monthly journey into the improbable. The desire to cheat death, to become immortal, has been with us since the beginning of time. Alchemists have been in pursuit of the potion for the elixir of life for thousands of years. Explorers have risked their lives to find the fabled waters of the Fountain of Youth. But has there ever been any proof that anyone has ever achieved immortality through physical rejuvenation or any other means? We may never know. Near the end of his days, the great French alchemist Nicolas Flamel has one last chance to create the elixir of life. He diligently follows the steps in an ancient treatise he has recently acquired, which leads him to create a machine, whose purpose, it turns out, is to contact the only alchemist who knows the elusive potion's formula. We invite you now to sit back and relax as you listen to Makeshift Stories, episode 130, The Immortal. Somewhere in some time, what price would you pay to live forever?
As the light began to fade, Nicolas Flamel lit the candles, then looked through the newly installed glass window. It was a rare luxury which had cost his wife Perronel a small fortune, but as winter had begun to set in, Nicolas truly appreciated that he could now keep the wooden shutters open. He got up from his workbench and meandered over to the amazing transparent sheet. It kept the cold winds out while allowing the warm sun in. The new material was truly a marvel, he thought. The invention of which any alchemist would have been proud to hang their name on. Beyond the glass, the great stone buttresses that supported the vaulted ceiling of the nave on the east end of the Notre Dame were falling into shadow. The sun set this time of year between the two great towers at the west end of the massive cathedral. Still encased in wood scaffolding, they would be the tallest in Europe, at least until some other city tried to better Paris. With so many new engineering and alchemical wonders, Nicolas thought, the 1400s were a great time in history to be alive. He had just come back from a trip to Spain, where on the road to Santiago he had encountered a strange mage from the Holy Land who had imparted to him an ancient alchemical treatise containing the secret to the Philosopher's Stone and other long-lost knowledge from antiquity. He turned away from the windows, returning to his workbench. He had finally managed to gather all the ingredients, and tonight would make the first batch. If successful, he would use it to animate a clockwork. The machine, according to the treatise he had been given, was the next step in the lost process of creating the elixir of life. But he didn't understand why. Nicolas carefully poured the elements he had crushed into a ceramic crucible. Each had been pre-measured time and time again, and each was methodically added in order and crushed with the exact number of specified turns of the pestle. When all was ready, Nicolas picked up the crucible and placed it on the glowing embers of the fire in the old stone hearth, returned to the window, and waited for the moon to rise. Flamel was nearly 80 and knew he did not have much time left for this world. His health had begun to rapidly deteriorate on his arrival back in France. At first, he had blamed it on the rich food he had consumed on the trip, but the pains in his chest refused to go away. Consumed by the ravages of arthritis, his wife, while years younger, could also see the end of her time looming. If the recipe worked to animate the clockwork, then he would be ready to move on to the next step in the creation of the elixir of life. Only one other time in the history of alchemy had such a feat been accomplished. The mage had assured him that the treatise was an exact copy of the process the legendary Persian had used. As the first beams of the new moon spread across the darkened streets of Paris, Nicholas removed the crucible from the fire and poured its molten contents into an iron receptacle at the heart of the clockworks. Small flames licked out as the grease on the inside burnt off. He put the crucible down, then exhausted, gripped his chest with one hand. He needed to sit down and allow the pain to pass. Nicholas had fallen asleep, and the moon had reached its highest point in the sky when the clockwork began to tick. Its gears started to move, then slowly come up to speed. In turn, small camshafts pushed tentatively at a leather bellows.
"Hello," its mechanical mouth said. "I am Austains."
Nicholas woke in mid-snore.
"Who's there?" he demanded.
"Austains,"
the clockwork clattered.
"The Persian?"
Nicholas, now fully awake, questioned excitedly as he bounded out of his chair as fast as his aging body would allow.
"Are you the Persian?"
he asked again, fearing what he was hearing might only be a dream. The clockwork mouth twitched as if it was considering how to respond.
"I am Austains. That is what I have been named. And whom am I speaking to?"
"Nicholas Flamel."
Nicholas replied awkwardly to the clockwork. He found it strange talking to a collection of bronze, wood, and leather, but it was obvious the Philosopher's Stone had worked. After years of searching and struggling, he had finally hit on the correct formula, and not a moment too soon. He felt his heart complain again under his paper-thin skin. It was a constant reminder of his mortality. But there was still one more step, and only an alchemist who had already become immortal knew it, and there was only one in all of history. So, luck had been with him on his first try. Nicholas had managed to contact the legendary Persian. Some claimed that Austains, who had lived more than 1,000 years ago, had never existed, that the great alchemist was just a pen name used by classical writers. But Nicholas had read those ancient texts and come to the conclusion that Austains had been a real person, the first to find the elixir of life, and thus the first and only alchemist to become immortal. Frustratingly, Austains had chosen not to document his greatest success. Its secrets had gone with him to the place of the immortals.
"You are connecting with me from beyond time, Austains. Beyond the physical realm?"
Nicholas tried to confirm.
"I have no physical body."
Behind the voice, the clicking of the clockworks could be heard.
"If that is what you mean."
"But you are Austains, correct? The parent of all alchemy, the teacher of Alexander the Great, and Democritus, the greatest mage in the line of Zoroaster?"
Nicholas questioned excitedly, then fell back into his chair, his ailing heart shooting pain across his chest. The clockwork seemed to hesitate again before it simply said,
"Yes, I exist outside of time."
"You have arrived none too soon, friend Austains. Time is my enemy. The days keep rolling forward despite my efforts to step aside. They sweep me on like a man drowning in a strong current, and I fear that I am losing the struggle. My head will soon go under."
Nicholas sighed.
"And I am afraid it is the same for my poor wife. I am so happy that I have found you."
"And I, you. I sense that it has been a long time since I shared my thoughts with another. Too long. And now to be so fortunate to talk to the great French alchemist, Nicholas Flamel."
Nicholas struggled back to his feet.
"I am known in the place of the immortals. How?"
"You have always been known, even before you were born,"
the clockwork cryptically replied. Nicholas was not sure what to make of the comment, but he was tired and needed to rest.
"I must sleep now. It has been a long day. Will you still be here tomorrow?"
"Just call my name," the mechanical clapped.
Flamel had trouble sleeping, so he felt no more rested in the morning than the night before. between mouthfuls of bread and lukewarm gruel, he studied Perronel. He could see the pain the ugly disease caused in her every movement, and wished more than anything to see her suffer no more.
"I finally made a breakthrough last night, Perronel. I created Philosopher's Stone."
She smiled.
"That's great news. I thought you had given up. My dearest, the stone is only the first step, and I fear you might be on a fool's errand."
"That might be so, but you know I will never give up until my last breath. And I have done much more than create the stone. It has allowed me to animate a clockwork, just as the mage from the Holy Land said it would. Perronel, it worked. It opened a crack in the world. I can talk to Austains. Can you imagine that? I can get the final steps from him."
Perronel looked skeptical.
"Don't torture yourself so, Nicholas. You have been working too hard. Are you sure you did not dream that this occurred?"
"Come with me to my workshop and hear for yourself."
Flamel eased himself out of his chair, then helped Perronel to her feet. Together, they slowly made their way up the dark, narrow stairs to the top floor where the workshop was located. Both were exhausted by the long climb. Nicholas's heart strained to burst out of his chest, and Perronel's knees and hips felt like they were ready to seize up. They each took a chair to recover.
"I'm not sure how much longer I will be able to climb the stairs," Nicholas gasped. "The clockwork is on the work table by the windows."
He waved a hand at a strange device. A wooden armature held dozens of brass gears in place. They traced a circuitous route from the center where a gray metal box had been placed, getting progressively smaller and branching until they ended in a series of discs mounted to a camshaft. Little wooden pegs had in turn been mounted to the wheels, and over them leather had been stretched to form a mouth of sorts, and behind them a bellows had been placed.
"Great Austains! I am back, and I have brought my wife to meet you,"
Nicholas announced loudly in a firm but friendly voice. They waited, but nothing happened.
"Are you sure you were not just dreaming last night?"
Perronel questioned, before the innermost gears began to move, making a ticking sound.
"Good to hear from you again, friend Nicholas."
The lips moved, making Perronel jump.
"Are you real?"
she asked.
"I have been given the name Austains, and I exist. Otherwise, how could I talk to you?"
"Are you a spirit, a ghost, or some kind of unholy conjuring?"
Perronel persisted.
"I assure you that I am none of those,"
the voice replied confidently.
"An extraordinary feat of alchemical science facilitates our meeting. Nothing else. But it is a feat that only a few, such as your husband, has ever been able to achieve."
Perronel looked at Nicholas. He could see the questions in her eyes.
"I'm not sure what to think, Nicholas. It seems too good to be true."
She turned back to the clockwork.
"Austains, are you an immortal?"
"Yes."
The voice did not hesitate.
"And you have the secret to immortality?"
"Again, yes."
"What is it like to be immortal?"
Perronel asked.
"There is no pain, no sickness, no beginning or end. There is no concern with material things, only time. Time to contemplate the infinite, time to explore the natural and supernatural. I can help you both end your pain and enter the realm of immortality."
"There is no pain?"
she questioned, and when the voice did not reply, added,
"I mean, in the transition, will we feel pain?"
"It has been so long that I cannot honestly remember."
The voice was hesitant this time, as if it was unsure of its response.
"The fact that I cannot recall surely speaks to the insignificance of the process. But it will require all the alchemical experience Nicholas has to assemble the apparatus to accomplish your transition. But once done, the process is simple and quick.
This seems too good to be true,
Perronel noted, again looking at Nicholas with doubt written across her face.
Tell us more. For example, what have you witnessed in the last 1,000 years?
I have seen great civilizations rise and fall. I witnessed Constantine issue the Edict of Milan, helped Claudius Ptolemy invent modern astronomy, watched civilization in the lands between Europe and Asia come and go, helped my fellow Persians use the power of the wind to irrigate the land, helped design the great temple of Angkor Wat in the Far East. I have seen many wondrous things, too many to mention here without spending days in the telling. I have seen it all, and you will too. Join me.
Thank you, Austanes,
Perronel said, then motioned for Nicholas and her to leave.
You have given us a lot to think about, but we need to consider your proposition. We know the path we are on now, but what you offer is, well, it is for us, Nova Terra, a new world for which we do not know the risks or know if it is even real.
They made their way back down the stairs. Perronel looked into her mug of barley tea, warming her hands around it.
Why do you hesitate, Perronel? We have nothing to lose. You know I will not live much longer. And you, your pain is constant and grows worse by the week. You hide it well, but I can tell.
Nicholas placed a hand on hers and started to caress its swollen joints.
There may be some things worse than death, Nicholas. That is what we risk. This apparition could be something you did not intend, a possession of some sort, not the great alchemist as it claims.
Nicholas sighed.
It may be my desperation, Perronel, but I feel this is our one and only opportunity. What harm would there be in building the alchemical apparatus he has told us we will need? You can try to learn more from Austanes as I work. And when I have completed all the tasks, if you are still skeptical, we can abandon the endeavor.
Slowly getting up to look out the only other window of glass in their house, Perronel considered her husband's plea. He had indeed been getting worse, and in her bleakest moments felt he would not see the next spring's magnolia blossoms on Ile de Lucite. She reluctantly gave in.
Fine. Build the device as the voice directs, but I will be challenging its assertions.
The list of materials Austanes dictated to Nicholas was extensive, and some, such as the thin threads of copper, the disembodied voice called wire, required weeks of painstaking work by some of the finest jewelers and craftsmen in Paris. The expense was not insignificant, and the Flamels had been forced to sell off family heirlooms to pay for some of the costs. Nicholas, constantly troubled by his heart now, had been forced to live in the workshop on the top floor. His condition had deteriorated to the point where he had to take frequent naps during the day. Despite his growing limitations, he had taken on the project with the fever of his youth, spending all his waking hours constructing the apparatus. It was past the winter solstice when Perronel found Nicholas asleep at his workbench. Perronel eyed the silent clockwork suspiciously. Her conversations with it to date, usually while Nicholas was asleep, had been cryptic at best. It now stood on a raised wooden platform along one wall with parts of the new apparatus lying around it. She took the opportunity to interrogate it again, hoping for it to finally say something more concrete.
Are you there, Austanes?
Without hesitation, the leather lips began to move.
Yes, Perronel. Let us continue our discussions. Perhaps this will be the day I can finally convince you.
Despite all your well-thought arguments,
she began,
you have given me no proof, only your word. I admit that hearing you speak through the alchemical device makes me pause to think, but could you not just be a ghost or spirit or an apparition that has seized upon my husband's desperation? It is not just the church in Rome that believes in possession. Should I call a priest?
We have been over this point many times, Perronel. Call a priest if you must. They will not be able to exorcise me, but will certainly ask a lot of difficult questions about your talking clock. You and your husband won't want to be accused of witchcraft. I believe that is something which still happens in your time. As you know, Perronel, objects cannot be possessed. There is no historical support for this, and yes, some objects may be used to attract a spirit. However, this does not mean the spirit inhabits the object. The apparition inhabits those who wield it. If you believe I have possessed your husband, move the clockworks as far away from him as you want. But I will still be able to talk through this device. It is the Philosopher's Stone which makes this possible. I am not in the clockworks. The gears and rods only use the alchemical energy of the stone to produce my words through the leather lips and bellows behind them, which Nicholas has faithfully recreated from an ancient plan. No. My connection with you is alchemical and mechanical, nothing else.
Perronel sat down stiffly to consider what the voice had said.
There is more to the world than you can know right now. Much more. And when you finally understand, it will all be within your reach. Join me here and let's explore it together. The apparatus is almost finished, and your husband does not have much time left, Perronel. You must decide.
Nicholas stirred, gripping his chest. Perronel reached out to comfort him.
There is no pain, correct? That's what you've claimed. I couldn't stand to see him suffer anymore.
She pursed her lips and used her free hand to wipe away a tear.
You will not be physically harmed. So if the process does not work, you will simply be as is. And if it does, you will still be as you are, but here as well.
The response was cryptic, but Perronel had finally made up her mind.
How long before we are ready? I'll need a few days to take care of my things.
A week, at most.
After finishing the last arrangements for their estate, Perronel slowly climbed the stairs at noon. Exhausted, her joints screaming for her to stop, she paused at the top to watch her husband asleep on his bed. His breathing was shallow, and even in sleep she thought she could see him struggle. Despite the sight of his imminent demise, she could not make all her doubts go away. With the help of their assistant, he had finished both identical apparatus, which were now mounted on the backs of two chairs. A spiderweb of the incredibly expensive copper threads ran between the apparatus and the original clockwork, ending at the dull metal box containing the Philosopher's Stone. The apparatus, which reminded Perronel of a loosely woven basket, made of silver and copper strips, looked harmless enough. On how the Philosopher's Stone interacted with the baskets, and what would happen when the moment came, the voice that called itself Austain's had been notably vague. It only said that faster than the single beat of a hummingbird's wing, they would be transported to the realm of the immortals.
Austain's,
Perronel called to the clockwork.
I am here, Perronel, but I fear that we have little time. Nicholas complained about the pain all night. Help him into one of those chairs.
She could see that Nicholas's complexion had become sallow. If there was any other way, she would have taken it. But time had run out.
Come on, Nicholas. Let me help you.
Perronel gently roused her husband. His calm face silently turned into a grimace as she helped him to his feet. By the time she had positioned him on one chair, he was sweating. Too weak to speak, he patted her hand and held it to his chest. She could feel the irregular beat under her fingers.
What do I do?
Lower the basket onto his head, then sit down and do the same.
That's it?
The clockwork remained silent. Perronel waited a few moments, then, realizing Austain's would reveal no more, gave in.
Okay, Nicholas, are you ready?
He nodded his head slightly, too weak to say anything. She sat and donned her apparatus, held Nicholas's hand, then waited nervously. Suddenly, the room disappeared, replaced by a night so dark she couldn't see, nor could she feel her husband's hand.
Nicholas!
Perronel called out in panic.
Perronel!
His voice came from somewhere off to the side, calming her.
I'm free of the pain at last. It worked!
There was no other sound. No heat, no cold, only the empty darkness. It took a few moments for her to realize that the throbbing of her arthritic joints was gone. Perronel tried to stretch her arms, but found she had no arms to stretch.
What have you done, Austain's?
She screamed, desperately searching for her body, searching for something, anything to hold on to.
You are here, my dear Perronel.
Austain's voice emerged from nowhere and everywhere at once.
You are both with me. The three of us are now beyond the ravages of time. We are all immortal. But even in the absence of time, one can eventually tire of waiting. And I have been waiting for this moment far longer than you can imagine.
Why is there no light, no sounds, nothing at all?
Perronel demanded.
Yes, this is not how it's supposed to be,
Nicholas added, panic and fear edging into his voice.
Send us back! This is worse than death.
Even if I wanted to, I cannot do that, Austain's admitted. You'll learn how to see as I see, not through eyes, but through information. We are awash in knowledge, collected from every possible time, and through it we have all of history to explore. You'll soon learn to perceive the totality of existence as I do. It is a great gift that now only the three of us enjoy.
You are not Austain's, are you?
Nicholas accused.
You deceived us. I can understand if you will never forgive me, Perronel. I'm so sorry that I insisted we try this. This demon has stolen our lives, and I'm the one responsible. I was so desperate to end my pain, and that selfish desire has led us here.
I have not taken your lives, Austain's insisted, impatience creeping into his voice. Your doppelgangers, your other physical selves, are even now living out their miserable existence, waiting to expire. I have simply made a copy of your consciousness, memory, and personality. For all intents and purpose, a copy of your soul. Like taking a rubbing from a stone carving, but one so detailed that it is indistinguishable from the original.
We don't understand. How is that possible? We are here with you, nowhere else. We are not copies. And what are you, Austain's? As my husband has accused, you're not the great alchemist, are you?
Austain's let the silent nothing flood in around them before answering.
I was created and given that name. No other has or will be built. The knowledge to do this was lost long ago. But I have been waiting. Think of me as an infinitely large clockwork with uncountable numbers of gears that can keep track of everything. And Now that you are recorded here in the windings of my works, you are immortal, and I am no longer alone.
Finally, tired of waiting, Perronel opened her eyes. Nothing had happened. She thought she had briefly felt a tingle on her scalp, but it was a fleeting feeling that left nothing behind. The experiment had not worked. Relief surged through her frail body. She reached over to rouse Nicholas, but he did not move. Panicked, she listened for his shallow breathing, but there was nothing. Maybe it was for the better, she thought. He had been in so much pain. To die believing he could achieve immortality, possibly that had been a gift.
Austains?
She quietly called out, but the clockwork remained silent.
Makeshow Stories and the Alberta Podcast Network are powered by ADB. If you've got an idea and you're ready to turn it into a business, check out ATBX. ATBX is an incubator, an accelerator, a cohort of people disrupting their industries. Check it out today at atb.com/ATBX. We hope that you've enjoyed this month's story. As always, if you like what we're doing, please tell your friends about us or write a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher Radio, or join us on Facebook. We love hearing your comments, so send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at Makeshift Stories. And thanks to those from all over the planet who have already emailed us. We release a new story every month between the 15th and the 20th. This month's episode was written by Ellen B. Hare and read by Mitchell Tu. The opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by David H. And don't forget to listen to Series, which is posted around the beginning of the month. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means you're free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.